It may sound complicated, and I am not minimizing the difficulty of learning to use these maps. I think that it will not be a no-brainer, as they say, to learn these maps. However, once you learn how to use these maps, you will have access to all 43 of the BART stations. I believe that it will, from what we've learned from the focus groups, people will at first have a challenge learning how to use these, but will quickly come to be able to use the maps and understand that this is a resource that can be used for very effective travel planning. We're not leaving that up to chance. We are planning to develop, in conjunction with these materials, a bunch of training materials. So those will be available in a bunch of different forms, as audio, as Braille, as print. We will also develop training materials for O&M instructors to be able to work with clients and basically a teacher's manual for how to teach these the use of these maps, and we'll probably have podcasts and YouTube videos and stuff like that as well. The distribution of the maps will be done through the Lighthouse and through BART and through other other channels, and there will be an information campaign. We'll train BART personnel, like agents and station agents and other relevant frontline BART personnel, on the use of these maps. And BART, by the way, has been extremely supportive of this project. They wrote us a letter of support for the original grant, and we've been taking the materials back to the BART Accessibility Task Force periodically for to give them updates and get their feedback and ideas. And they've been uniformly very complimentary and supportive. Okay, so believe it or not, I've talked myself out. But with a brief, if I take a brief break for Greg to hand out the tactiles, then we can pick it back up again. And what I'm going to do is lead you through, since I don't have pens for everybody, but I do have tactiles that you can look on. If there aren't, I don't have a good sense of how many people there are here, but I've got, I should have enough for everybody, especially if you pass them around, because each sheet is a different view of the station. Each sheet is either a street view, a platform view, or a concourse view. So what I'm going to do now is, using the pen, I will take you on a detailed tour of the, this is the Coliseum BART station that we're all going to be looking at here. And I'm going to start on the, not all of you will have the street view, but I am going to start on the street view. And then I'll go to the concourse and the coffee's not kicking in. The platform, that's what they call that thing. So I've got the pen here hooked up to the audio system. Oh, shoot. And hopefully that's still working. So the pen it looks just like a pen. I can pass a few around later. It looks just like a pen. It's a little fatter, and you hold it like a pen. And you use, in the tip of the pen is a little video camera. And the video camera looks at the place I'm tapping on the page. And based on a dot pattern that's embedded in the visual image, it can know where I'm tapping. It will say the thing that I'm the thing that's programmed to say for that region. So it's not reading the I don't have that. Let me I can pass around a few more of the curse. How about that?
We need these ones back. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to get these ones back. They are not
cursed. Okay. It's not reading the map. It's not reading any print on the map. It's not reading any braille on the map. What it's doing is keying into the location on the map and saying what it's programmed to say. So, for example, I'm looking at the street view, and I'm going to talk about some of the symbols that we've used here. You'll see there are ovals with the letter B inside. Those ovals with the letter B inside are bus stops, and they're adjacent to a street, which is sort of a wide raised line. And up at the top of it, it says San Leandro. The pen also knows that it's San Leandro Street. So if I tap it,
Leandro Street.
Okay, so I just tapped it with the pen, and it said San Leandro Street. And all of the streets are labeled that way. If I tap over here,
Snell Street.
It's Snell Street. So that's another street. And Snell also has a braille label. So the idea is that we want these to be useful, very useful, without the pen. But if you have the pen, you get an additional resource to find out information. So the ovals with the B inside are bus stops. The triangle with the T inside is a taxi stand. If I tap on that...
Taxi stand on the west side of San Leandro Street.
Okay. If you follow San Leandro Street up towards the top, you'll see a square with an X inside it. One of the sides of that square is missing. That's an elevator symbol. In fact, there should be elevator on every one of the maps. The missing side of the square is the way that the door is facing. So if I tap on that on this elevator, it says
elevator up to pedestrian overpass and stadium.
So that's the elevator that goes to the stadium. There's another elevator on here. If I tap that,
elevator up to platform.
Okay, so that's the difference between these elevators. There's no braille labeling that says where those elevators actually go. That would just create way too much clutter. So the pen gives a lot of information about destinations. Similarly, we have stairways. The stairways are rectangles with horizontal bars going across. The bars represent the treads of the stairs, and there's an open end of the stairway and a closed end of the stairway. Inside the closed end of the stairway is a letter, is a braille letter and a print letter. In this case, on the street level, it says D for down. That means that the closed stairway, the far end of the stairway from the perspective of the person getting onto it from the street level, is a level below the these stairs go down. Okay? That's I'm gonna take questions in a little bit. I'm hoping that most of the questions will be answered by the end. A letter U would say that those stairs go up. Now, for escalators, if you look sort of top center, and there should be escalators on every one of the maps as well, you've got escalators are similar rectangles with, instead of bars that go straight across, little arrows or chevrons that point in either away from the entrance to the escalator or towards the entrance of the escalator. That's important because those indicate the direction of flow of the escalator. So if the arrows point away from the entrance of the escalator, that means you can get onto that escalator and go somewhere. If the arrows point towards the entrance of that escalator, that means you cannot get on that escalator. Well, you can, but you'd be spit right back out. Okay? So this will help you plan. This indicates which escalator is doing what. So if I tap on this escalator here, oops. So that's that means it's not, I'm tapping on a part that's not labeled.
Escalator up to pedestrian overpass and stadium.
Okay, so that's an escalator up to pedestrian overpass and stadium. Okay. If I tap on the stairs.
Stairs down from east parking lot to pedestrian underpass and BART station.
Okay. So again, these stairs don't say in Braille what they go to or where they are, but the audio layer does.
Stairs down from Snell Street to pedestrian underpass and BART station.
Okay. I'm going to switch to concourse view. And how am I doing on time, by the way?
It's been about half an hour.
So okay, great.
20 minutes.
Looking at the... Oops. Hold on. Okay, here's the... So on the concourse level, we have things like... there's a square with an RR inside it on the left. That's the restroom, if I tap on it.
Restroom.
Sorry. It's also a hip-hop musical device. sort of in the middle of this figure and going horizontally, you see sort of a dashed line with a set of crosshatch lines that go through it. These are the fare gates.
Fare gate.
And the dashed line is those BART fences that divide the paid area from the unpaid area. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with those. Also on this figure, straddling that fence on the right-hand side is the station agent booth.
Station agent booth.
Okay. It is a square. It's a shaded square with the letters SA inside it. There's, of course, escalators, elevators, and stairs on this figure as well. But a new thing on this one that wasn't on the other one is a ticket machine. You'll see that in the upper left corner is a semicircle against a wall with the letter F inside it. If I tap that, it says, or should.
How about the other one? Does the other one work?
I don't know.
Side of the station.
Okay, so it looks like this
ticket machine.
Okay, there it is. Sorry, these are I have to admit that they are prototypes, so we're not in production yet. That's the good part. And these are things that are these are the evaluation copies. So that's one of the things that I'll be
ticket machine
responding to them about. If you look inside the paid area of the station here, you'll see that there's stairs in the lower right and lower left, and then there are also there are also escalators. One is going up to the the platform, and one is coming down from the platform. Both of them have the letter U inside the closed end of the escalators, but the direction of flow is different. So both escalators connect to a level above or up, but they flow in different directions. If I tap on one of, on the one that's coming towards
escalator us. Escalator down from platform for all trains.
So escalator down from platform. The other one says
escalator up to platform for all trains.
Okay. So if I tap on the stairs.
Stairs up to platform for all trains.
And the other one.
Stairs up to platform for all trains.
So that's the overview. And of course, we on this map, we also have the
elevator up to platform for all trains. Stairs up to pedestrian pass and stadium.
So we still have those. I'm going to now switch to the platform level. And the platform is really has some cool stuff going on. So on the left and right are tracks, and those are dotted, three parallel dotted lines. The solid lines adjacent to the tracks are the platform edges, and sticking out sort of like tick marks from the platform edges are short lines that indicate where the train doors will open. The ones at the center of the platform, where the center of the train will be, also have little round dots on the end of them. There are two doors on each platform that are marked that way. So, because basically there are two center doors. There's the first door back from the center of the train and the first door forward from the center of the train. Those are always the two center doors. BART actually marks the center four door openings on its platforms with unique coloring, but we're only doing the center two, again, to reduce clutter and because it facilitates counting from the back. Also on this platform figure, we have benches. The benches are the little round markers in the middle. If I tap on a bench, it'll say bench. And all benches are little round circles. Even though, for those of you who've been on BART, you know that they have these cute little mushroom-shaped concrete benches, but they also have rectangular benches. We are not going to show rectangular benches as rectangles. All benches will be these little round symbols. That's just to keep clarity and simplicity on the graphs. The openings to the stairways and escalators are lined up with where the train doors will open. So, for example, here's a stairway.
Stairs down to concourse.
So if I tap on that, the opening to that stairway is lined up on the Fremont platform with a train door that is this one.
Train door, two back from center.
So you could count that, or you could just tap on it to say train door, two back from center. So the Braille, each platform is labeled with, so the left one is Fremont, Dublin, Pleasanton, it says DP, and the right-hand one is Richmond, SF. For some reason, the audio is not...
Track two. To Richmond and San Francisco.
Okay. So the other one is
track one. To Fremont and Dublin Pleasanton.
Sorry for the audio trouble there. So the idea is as I mentioned earlier, by getting on, by knowing that you're getting on this train two doors back from center and that door is lined up with the stairs down to the concourse, and by knowing that these maps are all designed in the same way for every BART station, you should be able to track your way in from the bus stop or the taxi stand or the loading zone into the entrance of the station, through the fare gates, find the escalator, elevator, stairs of your choice, get to the platform that you need, and get on at the train door that a known location on the train, and then be able to trace your path out of the station at the other end, up to and including finding your destination on the street. That's the idea. These maps are not intended for you to stand around in a BART station scratching your head and saying, where the heck am I? These maps, as many Braille maps and accessible maps are, these are intended for you to build your own cognitive map of a station that you're unfamiliar with. You could potentially use them in a station. For example, we would like to have the BART station agents have copies of these maps so that they can say, "Oh, do you want to see a map of the station?" You know, so that you know where you're headed to. But really, primarily, because these maps take a little bit of time and all maps take a little bit of learning, the hope is that people will have these in their hands at home, will have some training with how to use them, and will be able to use them independently to plan their travels that include BART stations to which they've never been before. I think that we should take some questions. So I'd like to do, since I can't see, the easiest way, why don't you just call out if you have a question, and if you, do you have a specified way to do this, Gene?
Well, I first want to find out from our support people with audio equipment, do we have a wireless mic? Because we do want, do we have one?
We actually have two of them.
Okay, good, because we want to get the people on the mic, so we'll do that. And I'm going to, I'm going to ask you one question. I know that you're still developing these maps for BART. What are your thoughts long term, after you've perfected it to satisfaction, particularly yours? Where do you see it getting this outside of BART, other transit districts, for their use, like light rail and other rapid rail and light and heavy rail?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. I mean, that is the goal. That is the idea. The idea is that these will. This is a pilot project. This is a demonstration that these are useful materials. And the hope is that other transit agencies will look at what we have done for BART, and say that's cool, or that blind individuals will say, well, BART's done this really cool thing. Why doesn't Toledo do this really cool thing? Or why doesn't the T system in Boston do this cool thing? Or why doesn't the Chicago Underground or L do this same thing? And the hope is that by leading the way by example, we will create an environment where these types of materials come to be part of the standard toolkit for transit accessibility. And of course, in parallel, what we're doing at the Lighthouse is creating systems by which these maps can be created. So we're developing a user side. User-side demand and training materials, and that should help push the other transit agencies in the right direction. And we're also creating a method for duplicating this project elsewhere. I think that access to transit information is really one of the key aspects of transit accessibility. And I think that many of the people that are now using paratransit who are blind really would in many ways prefer to use the fixed route transit, but they don't because of their uncertainty about their ability to navigate the system effectively. The hope is that by providing these materials, we will enable a whole new group of blind and visually impaired people to be able to take advantage of the transit facilities that are already in place and use them confidently and independently.
Thank you. Now,
okay, my name is Jane Cardis, and I'm from Ukiah, California. I happen to have inherited a smart pen, but I did not inherit the charger. And I've had a horrible time trying to communicate with them. Nobody returns my calls, and I'm wondering, you know, what I can do and how I can get the smart pen, since you say you need the smart pen to deal with this map. Do you have any ideas?
Well, as I said, the maps are designed in such a way that you don't actually need the smart pen to access the maps. The smart pen provides you with a great deal more information, but the maps are designed to be useful without the smart pen. And by the way, I don't think I mentioned that the maps are not just tactile. They're also overprinted with large print, high contrast visual maps. So the idea here is that there are three ways of accessing the information on these maps: with low vision, with tactile, and with the audio aspects of the pen. For your question about getting a charging cradle, I believe you can buy them at Target, and you can also order them online at the LiveScribe website. The reason they are not a retail company, so they're not really set up for the kind of customer service that you might want. Their model is to sort of sell through resellers, and part of that may negatively impact you if you don't have access to the online store or whatever. What I would suggest to you is if you can't use their website yourself, I would try to get an assistant to order a charging cradle online for you. And they're pretty inexpensive. I think they're less than $20.
Josh, okay. Can you spell the name of the company?
It's LiveScribe, LiveScribe.
Okay.
And their website is, of course, livescribe.com.
We'll have to, we have just a few more minutes, so we got to have real short questions and answers.
Okay.
I have a question over here.
Sheila Gunn Cushman, San Lorenzo. I wish I'd had this map a year ago.
I wish I'd had it 10 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt. My first question
Just one.
Well,
we really have short time. We got some other speakers to go. So one per person.
Choose your favorite.
Go.
I would like to know if you can add on the platform, well, everywhere, where the pay phones are, where the agent phones are, and where the, I forget what the technical term is for it, but the thing you can break with the glass and get at something for emergencies if you need it.
I understand your question. And those questions were extensively discussed in our focus groups because we wanted to know what features people really wanted on the maps. And we decided that those features were not worth representing as tactiles because they're not part of the sort of primary transit functionality of the map. These are transit maps, so the idea is to get you to facilitate your use of the transit itself. Now, that doesn't mean that those features are unimportant. Everybody in the focus groups wished that we could represent those, but because of the clutter problem, the more symbols you introduce, the less readable your maps become. So what we would like to do and may do but have not committed to doing is include that information in the audio layer. So, for example, if you tap on a stairway, it could say stairway, you know.
Stairs down to concourse.
But it could also say agent phone is located along the right-hand side of this stairway on the, you know, on the Richmond side or something like that. So you could include that in the audio layer, but we decided not to put it on the tactiles.
Vita Zavoli has a question back here.
Go ahead.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Vita.
Hi. For those of us who've done a lot of training, you know that people will follow training materials to the letter. So we need to be. So one of the things I really wanted to mention is those of us who take BART know that the escalators are sometimes reversed and it's not going down when you think it should be. And also that the bus stops move. So I just want to make sure that this was mentioned somewhere right up front in the materials, the training materials, especially for those people who are visiting the Bay Area and don't really know those things.
So there will no doubt there will be included a, you know, these maps are not guaranteed to be useful for any particular purpose type language. But you're absolutely right. Features do change, and part of our decision-making process around selecting the features to be included tactily is to minimize the need for moving things around. Bus stops do move, but because there are often bus shelters and so on, the bus stops move more rarely than the bus numbers change. So we can update the bus numbers very easily by changing the software. You're right. Other stuff can move as well. I think that, and the escalators, by the way, there are some escalators that reverse every day, that reliably reverse because of the commute direction. So in the morning they're running in one direction, in the afternoon they're running in another direction. We actually have a symbol for that, which is the escalator, instead of having arrows pointing only in one direction, it's got a zigzag with a double, an arrow pointing sort of in both directions. And those will indicate escalators that habitually change direction. Now the truth is that any escalator can be reversed, and we won't be able to guarantee that. What we can do is represent the escalator's intended direction, and that's designed as part of the system. So the intended direction of an escalator is really fairly fixed, but they do reverse sometimes, especially because if they shut down another escalator or something for maintenance or construction. So I think that really the main thing to keep in mind is that this is not a this is not intended to be a replacement for your fundamental travel skills. In fact, what it's intended to be is providing you with the information you would need to say, shoot, well, I usually do use this entrance, but the escalator's running in the wrong direction. Luckily, I know where the other entrances are. And that is part of what we're trying to build, is people's a better holistic representation of people's ideas of the BART station, rather than just the features that they use that they use. So yeah, well, disclaimers for sure, and the idea is to provide people with the information they need to take detours in real time if necessary.
We have time for about two more questions.
Hi, Michelle Singleton.
On the mic, please.
I am on the mic. Okay. Michelle Singleton, El Dorado Hills via OCB. Question, I wasn't here earlier, so I don't know if it was mentioned. What are we looking at for the cost of this?
So that's a great question. The cost is basically is based on a number of factors, okay, including how many we produce and who subsidizes it and how it's subsidized. The cost per booklet, the actual cost is fairly steep. The cost to the users, we are aiming at having be either free or at an affordable price, and the affordable price is yet to be determined. But we obviously realize nobody's going to be paying. We don't expect people to pay cost for this, in the same way that we don't actually pay cost for transit. Not just as disabled people, but in fact nobody pays cost for transit.
Sam Chen has a question here.
Sam Chen from Saratoga. Sounds great. This, you know, and I would like to see if we could have a hands-on experience on that. So I wonder if it's available, if it is, where and when, how can we contact that to have to spend some time on that? You know, because listening to what you said, it sounds all great, but I want to try it.
Sure, and that's why I handed out the tactiles, and I have a pen. I have a couple of pens here that you guys can try if you want, and I think that there are other speakers that are going to be coming immediately on our heels, so you won't be able to try it right away, but we'll be around for this afternoon. And of course, get in touch with the Lighthouse. The Lighthouse is the perfect way to get more resources and information about this project. So
if we come to Smith Caldwell, can we try it out? If I come, huh?
Yeah, I think the Lighthouse is the right approach. If you are interested in discussing the design and development aspects of it, I'd be delighted to talk to anybody, and I have cards to hand out. But if you're interested in sort of the service delivery end of this, the Lighthouse would be the right channel for you.
That was our last question. So Josh and Greg, could you give your contact information, the one you would want people to use, since we're also, this is out on the internet, so there's people out there elsewhere that might be interested, if you could provide contact information?
Absolutely. So my name is Dr. Josh, or Joshua Mealy. It's M like Mary, I-E-L-E. And my email address is jam@ski.org. It's jam@ski.org. And that's email is probably the best way to reach me. For those in the room, I have plenty of cards. Anybody who wants a card, in fact, I'll maybe give those to be handed out to those who want them.
We need to over here.
Okay. And Greg, do you want to give some contact information for yourself? Because we need to go on to our next speakers.
Okay. Even as I speak, Beth Berenson is moving around the room, passing out business cards for Josh and myself. But you can reach me at the Lighthouse. I'll give you my departmental email address because it's a bit shorter. AIS, as in Access Information Services, So ais@lighthouse-sf.org. And email is probably the best way to reach me. But I do have a number. Our main switchboard can always pass you through as well. At lighthouse-sf.
San Francisco.
As in San Francisco. .org.
Can I have your name?
My name is Greg. Last name is Kehret. K-E-H. R-E-T.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That was great. Okay. Let's give them a
Thank
hand.
Thank you very much, everyone.
That's quite an accomplishment. Thank you very much,
Our
both. Over the many years that we've been doing this joint session, one of the things we repeatedly hear is... how do we do some advocacy? How do we become advocates? And on a local basis, particularly. And concern has been issues, transportation as well as pedestrian issues. And if I could have everyone's attention, please. So what we... we're going to have our next two speakers, but we'll be touching on transportation and also related to its pedestrian advocacy in different arenas and different approaches. Our first speaker founded a grassroots transit advocacy group in 2001 here in Sacramento. And the group was to... works on time, affordable, safe, and all integrated, accessible transportation issues to deal with fixed route and light rail and paratransit services. And so we're going to our speaker's going to talk about how you can become effective advocates in your local community, and hopefully this will empower you so that you can take on your local transit district or paratransit service to improve service or to expand it. And so I'd like to introduce the founder and director of Ridership for the Masses, Barbara Sten.
Thank you, Gene. And can everybody hear me? Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Gene and Bernice, for the invite. I'm here today to talk a little bit about advocacy and activism and how and why you should step up. So how many of you here have attended a meeting or a hearing? Okay, and did you speak on an issue? So would you say that a definition, what is the definition of an advocate? Does anybody know what a definition of an advocate is? Sheila, anybody? You can just speak up.
Well, I think there was on mics.
Okay.
Go ahead and just speak up.
Someone who speaks for themselves and others who may not be able or willing to speak.
Yes, someone who speaks up for themselves and others that are not able to speak on behalf of their on behalf of them. Do you think advocacy starts with an issue or a complaint? That's how advocacy starts. Ridership for the Masses started because we. In our community, wanted to go to the state fair on the weekend. We were one block away from the light rail station. We were less than 4 miles from Cal Expo, and on a Sunday, it would have taken us over 45 minutes to get there. So we thought, what is wrong with this picture? 45 minutes to go 4 miles, and we're right by a light rail station. So we found out the reason it would take so long is because there wasn't a direct bus from the north area. We could get on the light rail station, but then we had to wait for another bus to take us to Arden Fair, to get on another bus to go to the state fair. So we said, wow, what can we do about this? This is really bad. We got in our car and we drove and we paid an extra $10 for parking. But we didn't really know how. We wanted a bus. That's what we wanted. We wanted the bus on the weekends only. But we didn't know anything about what to do. So my daughter knew someone in the community and she said, call this person up and they'll be able to tell you. And they said, oh, no problem. You get a group of people together, you start a group, you get a name, you get a vision, you get a mission, and you write a position paper, you go out to the community and you gather support, and then you go to the RT board and you demand a bus. Oh, yeah, that's great, you know, okay, let's go do that. And we did, we actually did. We put a position paper together, we went out, we found out who the neighborhood association groups were, we went and spoke to them with our position paper, we went to the RT board, and guess what? We got a bus. That was weird. And it ran for the 6 days of the weekend. That's all we wanted it for, the 6 days that it would run through the state fair. And it ran for 9 years until 2010 when the major cuts happened. And so the bus sort of went by the wayside. So that's how you start advocating for yourself or for others. You have an issue or you have a complaint. And you speak up because that's the only way that change is going to be made. Don't you agree? You have to speak up. Either speak up as a person or connect yourself with a group that's going to go en masse and speak to an issue. But there's nothing wrong with speaking up because speaking up promotes change. If you had a sidewalk that you wanted to walk in your neighborhood and you couldn't do that because it was filled with potholes and cracks and it made it you virtually impossible to walk, what would you do? Would you you'd call. You'd find out who to call and then you'd call. And what happens if that doesn't happen? If something doesn't happen after you call? You call again. What about going to a meeting? Go to a meeting and say, look, I live between this street and that street, and maybe you could get, if you're blind, maybe you could get a sighted friend to take a picture and hold up the picture and say, look at this sidewalk. We think this sidewalk needs to be fixed. Right? And that's how you advocate. You get in collaboration with others. You go to your neighbors and you say, this sidewalk needs to be fixed. We need to go together and speak up for our sidewalk. Another story for Ridership for the Masses is Watt and I-80 station. I don't know if any of you here know about the Watt and I-80 station, but it had an immense pigeon problem. Yes. After 2 years, Ridership for the Masses spoke with staff, RT staff, for 2 years. And for 2 years, nothing was done. Nothing was done. It was like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, pigeon poop, excuse the expression, all over the station. Who cares? You know, no one cares. Someone even called Channel 13. That didn't even do it. So we decided, okay, we're going to try passive activism, which is an oxymoron, isn't it? Because what is activism? Activism is the militant approach to trying to get something done. Okay, you go out with signs, you start chanting, you know, that's what activism is. Okay, but we tried the passive activism approach. We went out to the light rail station for 2 days. We didn't camp out there, but we went day one, and it was raining, and it was about January 2nd or something, and it was raining. And we took pictures of the station, which was absolutely gross. It was gross. It was so gross that people were coming down the stairs. They were not holding on to the handrail because there was pigeon poop on the handrail. And it was slippery, and it was, I don't want to gross you out, but anyway, it was gross. And while RT pressure hosed the grounds, they never looked up to where the pigeons were roosting. So they have these big concrete pillars, and the pigeon poop was literally sliding down the pillars. You could see years of the poop being there. We thought, a picture tells a thousand words, right? So for 2 days, we took pictures. We took pictures, we put them together, we put another position paper, and when you do position papers, always add a solution that always sort of gets them. It isn't enough that you say, I want a bus, I want the station cleaned up, go further, you know, with a solution or a suggested solution, you know. That may get them, okay? So what we did was we took all the pictures together, the position paper, we put them in a nice little folder, and we stopped talking to staff. And we said, we're going to the board with this. And so we took our little packets, and we ran around to everybody's office on the board and got the package to them prior to the board meeting so they could see it and they could see what we're coming with. And we did that. We weren't on the agenda. We spoke off the agenda. We said, you have the packets. We knew that RT was going to have the packets by the time we got there. But we were done talking to staff. So we got the packets. We suggested that they power wash the whole station. We suggested that they put up netting so it would be a barrier to the pigeons roosting. They even had the airport lady out. We had a meeting with them on site to figure out how we would deal with the pigeon problem, you know, the pigeon problem. And finally we took it to the board, and the board surprisingly said, yes, something needs to be done, and directed staff to do that. So now they decided to use birth control for the pigeons. They did not want to kill them. They did not want to capture them and remove them because they were afraid they were going to get killed. And on our website, we have the before and after pictures of what it looked like before and what it was afterwards. So our passive activism did work. And I know that's an oxymoron, but we went a little further than standing up there and just speaking. We showed them, you know, what this was all about. And it worked. And so today it's much cleaner. The pigeon flock is actually smaller. And while they're roosting on top of the thing now, they're not on the beams underneath, and they're not pooping on people's heads, or people aren't sliding on them, or, you know, like that. But that's how you can make a difference. And, you know, if you have a complaint, it's one thing to sit around and say, oh, you know, this and that. But you need to go out. You need to engage your neighbors. You need to engage other people. You need to perhaps join a group, and in mass you can go out. And it's the same thing with funding. You know, funding today is very bad. Very bad. But if you go and you testify and you tell your story, if you have time enough to testify and tell your story, you know, they put a face you know, they put a face. You have to make sure your face is there so they know who you are. And in RT, we sort of watch our, we watchdog RT, and we're there in their face constantly. RT has a, and it's just not physical things. RT has, and I'm going to bring it up, sorry, has a group called the MAC, the Mobility Advisory Council. It's been around for 5 years. How many people who live in Sacramento know that the MAC exists? If they were to go, and do you know the MAC exists because you went to the website and you knew it existed, or did you know about it through other means? Through other means? Because you could never find it on the website. You did not know that it existed. And it's made up of seniors and disabled people. And they're appointed to the MAC, to this council, for a period of time. No one knew it. So we went to the board and said, where can we find MAC on the website? You've had this group for 5 years, but no one knows about it. Is it an elitist group? Is it, what is it? You know? I know it's for disabled and seniors, but we cannot find it on the website. So they said, oh yeah, we should put it on the website. So, okay, they put it on the website. It's a little obscure still, and we're going to work on that because we want an icon. We don't want it on the left side of the page that says ADA and ADA accessible, and then you have to click on it, then you have to look for it. We don't want that. We want an icon that says the MAC. So people will know that there are meetings. They meet once a month. Is that correct? Once a month?
Yep.
Once a month on a Thursday, the first Thursday of the month. How many people knew that? No one knew that. It's a public, open meeting, you know. So that's what we've been doing, you know, and that's what you all should be doing. You should be out there speaking up if you have a problem. You know, what can they do to you? Nothing. You know, what could do for you and others, it could benefit others. And that's what advocating and activism is all about, is benefiting others. You know, so in the future, it will be better for all of us. Anybody have any questions?
I'm sorry, guys. Sheila Gunn Cushman again. First of all, most transit agencies have something like a MAC. All transit agencies have an accessibility / ADA coordinator. Every county has one. Every city has one by law. And if you call your county, city, transit agency, and they don't know who they are, that's the first thing you should advocate for with the board. Sometimes the staff is very good, sometimes they're not. I am an advocate of going straight to the board. I'll give the staff a chance, but honestly, I have not had very good response. Sometimes these committees are very good, and sometimes they're not. Before you sign up for one, watch them. Think, you know, watch how they do things, and if you find them to be useful, then join. If you don't, activate from the outside. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Sheila.
Do we have another question out there? Do we have another question? Anybody else has questions? Any more questions?
I guess not.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you.
Let's so get much.
Barbara, would you mind giving them some contact information so that people know how to get hold of you in case you have any questions? And can we end the conversation, please?
Okay, we have a website. It's called Ridership for the Masses. We have an email. It's rftm@rftm.info. And if you Google Ridership for the Masses, it will come up first or second on the list. I do have some handouts today that are also on our website. Our whole website is HTML, so I believe it's readable. There's no PDF on it, And that's another issue for another time about accessibility on websites.
Yes.
But that's something to advocate for. There's a big issue to advocate for is accessibility. My telephone number is 927-7446, and you can reach me there at any time. I do have cards. I have brochures. And I have a paper on how to attend a meeting or hearing and what to do. So I can pass that out also. And thank you so much. Have a good day.
Terry, would you like to come up, please?
I found the mic.
You know, Barbara spoke primarily, not exclusively, but primarily from the transit perspective of advocacy and activism. And it does apply across to other arenas. It's not just limited to transportation. In Sacramento and in many communities in California, there are pedestrian advocacy groups. In Sacramento, it's called Walk Sacramento. On the state level, California Walks, and in America Walks. And CCB has been a member of both the national and state groups, and some of us are members of our local groups. Our next speaker is going to talk about this pedestrian advocacy perspective. He's the manager of Walk Sacramento's Safe Routes to Schools. They campaign for complete streets, which are led and he'll be probably talking a little bit about the campaign, but these are two programs that, of many others, that this group does oversee in this community and is quite influential in improving things in our community. So, Terry Preston is going to be talking about, safe routes and how that can actually benefit safe routes to schools and how that can be beneficial to people with visual impairments. So let's give him a hand.
Yes, I do have a mic. I don't know what's left. You almost described me quite well. Okay. So, Walk Sacramento is a community-based nonprofit that was formed about 15 years ago when the founder and one of the key founders and first directors, Ann Garrity, was heading to a meeting at Breathe California, about three blocks from where she worked, and she found it was almost impossible to cross J Street at 12th at rush hour. It's a one-way street. I mean, many of us are familiar with it. And she just said, it's ridiculous that I, who pay for the streets as much as everyone else, am not accommodated. When she went to the city, and I follow up on the advocacy discussion that my friend Barbara Stanton talked about, they said, well, yes, we could do these various things, but then it would slow down traffic, and we can't allow that. So, which got Ann even more upset. She said, we need to have a group that looks at walkability and pedestrian access first and foremost. I mention this because Ann is one of the smartest people I've ever met. She worked for the Air Resources Board for a long time, produced very detailed reports, but I often like to say what really motivated her to form Walk Sacramento was she got pissed. It was just good old-fashioned, something needs to be done, and I'm mad about it. It actually led her to form this group. So what Walk Sacramento does is we work with local, state, and some more information on the national level as well in order to create more walkable communities. And people ask, well, who do you represent? And we like to say, well, we represent everyone. Some people have cars, many people have bikes, but we all have to walk. It's one of the most fundamental forms of of getting around. One of my frustrations is a phrase that, well, pedestrian advocacy is often listed as one of the alternative modes. Like, no, I think people walked before they did anything. Before bikes came along, before cars came along, before trains came along. And I'd like to say that the car is the most recent. It's the real alternative is the thing on four wheels. So I want to get that tossed out there. We worked with Gene Lozano for a long time, good friend of ours, an active participant on our walk list, so I'm very honored to be pleased to be asked here. So Gene mentioned two of our key programs. One is called Complete Streets, and the other one is Safe Routes to a School. I'll talk about Complete Streets first. Complete Streets goes back to the discussion that I had about Anne, is that when we design roads, we've been doing this about 50, 60 odd years, several generations, we design it for the car first. There are even old design manuals that refer to bicycles, the bicyclists, and pedestrians as these obstacles in the road. One of the reasons, yes, how do you get around those darn things? So, you know, and we talked to our good friends, the engineers, who say, why did you build what you build as terribly as you did? They say, well, that's what the design manual said, you know. So what the Complete Streets came out of two discussions, one at the national level with the last transportation bill, and at the state proposition bond that came up too. The idea was that when you look at spending tax money that we all pay in order to provide our roads, that everyone should be thought of. Everyone should be accommodated in some way. When a road is being built or now being rebuilt, the question should be not how fast does the car go, but how does someone walk along it? How do you get across it? Crossing the streets is one of our big concerns. If you want to ride a bicycle, can you ride a bicycle? These are all the questions to be answered as you build or rebuild a road. There isn't a fixed way to do it, and that's a thing that sort of challenging for our friends in the engineering world. They want step one, step two, step three, we have done our job. It forces a little bit of real creativity into how we look at our roads. I'm happy to report that some progress is being made. Walk Sacramento was very active in the general plan update for the city of Sacramento. As you know, the general plan is like the large outline of how a city or a county has to plan and design things. We have Complete Streets requirements in the city of Sacramento's general plan. We also make sure that there's more than a statement. It's also a matter of how we design roads and other things too. One of the key wins in the city of Sacramento's general plan was we got what's known as a more flexible level of service requirement. Now that's a very important term. Level of service is how the engineers determine whether a road is productive, quote unquote. Traditionally, if there was lots of cars going very fast over long periods of over a long stretch, it was considered a very good road. They would pat themselves on the back for having done a job. Bosses would pat themselves on the back for having done a very good job as well. This comes a little bit of background. I'm kind of a history buff. It comes back to when we designed our highway system back in the 1950s. We created the highway design manual, and people said, wow, when you design a highway, it's wide, it's fast, you move tons and tons and billions of cars along the road. Why don't we design every road like that? It works for I-5, why shouldn't it work for what? Avenue as well. Well, that's fine if you're a car zipping along from yon to hither. But of course, what it creates is these huge barriers throughout our neighborhood. Our current fights is with the Sacramento County on their general plan update. Sacramento County, following the Great Suburban Blah that followed World War II, created lots of wide roads. West Elk, you know, El Camino, Eastern roads like that operate essentially as the Great Wall of China for anyone trying to get across the road. If you look at the map, not only is it impossible to get across the road, but it's impossible to get through the neighborhood as well. So if we're trying to say, I don't want to cross this big, wondrous road, I want to try to take a side road, there really is none. You are doomed. And of course, the idea was, why would you want to do that? Get in your car and take the big, wide, fast road. So what our complete streets policies what we look at is we want to have policy put in that says when you design a road to accommodate everybody on it, across it, and through it as well. The next step in all that, of course, is then when we take the policies and you look at how roads are actually designed. What we discovered with Sacramento County is that they have this marvelous language. Every advocate will see this. We want complete streets that accommodate everybody. Oh, and it reads marvelous. At the back of the document, suspiciously in my view, separate from the actual policy language, is what they plan on building, which is more and more of the same. So you take the policy language and you hit him upside the head with it. This is why, when you're looking, first you need the words. A good advocate always says, first you want to have the policy. Because what we get back is, well, yes, but in this case, it's different. So we're currently working with the city, we're with the county on their general plan update. One of our victories on this point was the state legislation that was adopted several years ago that requires that when general plans are being updated anywhere in the state of California, it has to have complete streets elements involved in it. So it has to have that language in there. There are also guidelines that the state provides local jurisdictions that say what has to be in the complete streets plan itself. Well, we were lucky at Walk Sacramento in that one of our interns went to work for the state agency that actually designed these, that actually put these guidelines together. So she said, well, I need some help on this. We said, sure. And that's why you get your interns in the right places. So we had some good news, some bad news. These were guidelines. We wanted requirements, but the state doesn't work that way. They had lots of guidelines. We think we did a very good job there. And as a result, we have some ammunition to use when we go to local jurisdictions and they talk about involving complete streets in their plans. And we were able to have that involved. So I jumped over one thing. With the city of Sacramento, when we had the level of service put into the when we had what's called flexible level of service, that means that when a road is designed in downtown Sacramento, it's limited to that one area, but we have to start someplace, that it is considered acceptable for road to have higher congestion than it would otherwise be under level of service. This is one of our key points. Our engineer friends say congestion is bad. It slows cars down. One of our arguments is congestion is also good. It slows cars down. Exactly. And it also means that reduced speed also accommodates people who want to walk along the street or cross the street, bike, and all those as well. But it's getting past that mindset. We also discovered that businesses like to slow cars down, because if you're a business, you want people to see your sign. You want people to see your front door. So one of our surprising allies was the Downtown Partnership on this. He said, yeah, we like the idea of people slowing down because they'll stop, look up by, and say, hey, that's a restaurant that I haven't seen. At the store, I have it. I was flying 65 miles an hour past it, and I couldn't see it. So we have success at the state level. Well, we have some success at the local level. We're working with the county on complete streets plans right now. Some success at the state level in terms of complete streets requirements into general plans. Our big fight right now, and this is sort of late breaking news that I got yesterday, is Congress is looking at the transportation bill for the next 6 years. The transportation funding is unique in that it is where Congress appropriates and sets money traditionally, not for 1 year, but for 5 year span. This year, the goal is to go for a 6 year span. This locks in the money that is used for a variety of other different projects. It's a school, local retrofit on some roads, bike and new crosswalks, and also ADA funding as well. This is a critical fight right now. There's a body of opinion in Congress, I'll try to be nonpartisan about this, who feels that these are local issues that should be decided and funded at the local level. All that the transportation bill should fund are more highways from yon to hither. Funding from Congress has been important in providing backbone funding for local projects, which of course all tie to the national transportation system regardless, that do provide ADA transition. Stimulus funding last year, we worked with the county to provide a lot of ADA upgrades at a lot of intersections around the county. It is extremely important right now, today, if you have time, to go contact Barbara Boxer. This is my partisan rant. To contact Barbara Boxer and let her know that you support full and complete funding for complete streets, for ADA, and for safe routes to school. This is important. Senator Boxer is chair of the committee in the Senate that will produce the draft of the Senate side of the bill. She is she's extremely important. She just got reelected, so she won't have to come up for reelection for another 6 years. She's relatively strong. However, there is a tradition in the Senate of trying to be bipartisan on these concerns. So we haven't been getting the kind of strong language that we'd like to hear from Senator Boxer on this concern. Her partner, her counterpart on the Republican side, is a senator from Oklahoma, says that climate change is nothing but a big myth pushed by radical environmentalists. So we're concerned that if she's trying to compromise too much with him, we're going to end. Yes, yes. Yeah, yes, yes. He is infamous for lots of things. So we want her to stand up and be counted on this point. So my specific advocacy request is run, don't walk, to your phone, to your email, and let Senator Boxer know. And you can go onto our website at www.walksacramento.org, and it has all of the info and a link as well.
.org,
yes. Mary .org.
What's the number of the bill?
It's not a bill yet. It's the federal transportation bill. She'll know what it is. They're in the process of drafting the bill, so the bill hasn't been introduced yet. So we want to make sure that when it gets introduced, it has the right things in it. And she'd been getting a lot of phone calls, so her staff will go, yeah.
Does that include altering the curbs so that the scooters can go, can cross? Because so many of the street curbs just have a drop. So is that in it?
Yes, it helps provide funding for ADA curb cuts and the improvements. Yes, okay. On that point, I want to go to one of our other key projects and sort of what I initially designed as a theme for this discussion, our Safe Routes to School project, which is also funded in part by the transportation bill. The state of California actually has a separate Safe Routes to School program, which provides funding. It's from federal transportation dollars. All come from the same pot eventually. It just takes a different route. I came to Walk Sacramento as a parent volunteer at a Walk to School, Safe Routes to School program at my son's school in the South Natomas community. We have been able to successfully garner Safe Routes to School grant funding for a number of different projects. One of the ones I like best so far that's been built is an improved intersection at the corner of Mill Creek and West El Camino between Truxell and I-5. This intersection, it's an on-ramp essentially for I-5 in the morning. There were two large high-density apartment complexes right across the street. You had parents driving 2.5 blocks to drop their kids off at school because they could not get across the street. It was simply unsafe. You know, it's 7:30 in the morning. People are flying down the road. They are half awake. You know, no parent would want to have their kids cross there. We were able to garner support from the school and from the DOT to get a Safe Routes to School project at that intersection that provides a stoplight, there's a full traffic light, a dedicated left turn lane, there's a bike activation signal for the bike riders as well, curb cuts and curb extensions as well, which not only slow down traffic, but most importantly, they shorten the distance that you cross between the street, which is extremely important. There's also, I guess you call it a chipper there, the beep beep, you know, for folks, that's it. Some refer to it as a chipper, so there is that. The importance of that was driven home to me on one of my walk to school ventures when there are two parents who are sight impaired who walk their daughters, there's two of them, into school each morning. And they were able, we want kids to get out and walk with their parents. It not only allows them to walk safely across the street to school, but I was talking with one of them one morning, and she said it also allows her to walk to the local store. There's a large concentration of shopping right about a long block away from this intersection across Truxell. Two great fast streets that are unsafe even for people who try to cross against the light. This intersection gives them an alternative, a safer alternative to get across the street to get to that store. It is extremely important in that sense. Looking at how where a lot of Safe Routes to School projects work, they not only improve crossings for kids to school, but also for anyone walking around the neighborhood as well. For schools that are in higher density areas, or even in many suburban areas, the crossings are often at places that provide alternatives for kids, and also for anyone who wants a safe way to cross the street. I mention this because one of the things a good advocate does, kind of picking up on what Barbara was saying, is you kind of find the issues that also benefit you as well. Safe Routes to School is designed to benefit kids, and it was called Safe Routes to School in part, and it's a good program because it's hard to argue with it. Someone comes up and says, "What, are you for unsafe routes to school?" You know, you can't say no to it. It messages and frames the issue extremely well. So it's a good way to get improvements around school, and improvements can be up to 2 miles around a school. That also creates a way that's hard to kind of say no to it. So far, Safe Routes to School has proved politically popular. It hasn't been directly challenged in the federal transportation argument yet, and we're kind of happy about that. So, but we still want to make sure that we get the word out as well. Anyway, I'll get back here. So, where we need to go, I'll kind of wrap up here, I know we're kind of going around, is one, please contact Senator Boxer as soon as you can. Let her know your concern. She needs to hear it. At the state level, one other issue we're working with right now, and actually Gene has offered us some important insight on that, is there's a state committee called the California Traffic Control Devices Committee, which determines what signage and what markings go in around on roads and intersections, things all along that sign. This is a committee that is extremely important in determining what engineers can build. Again, when you go to the engineer and say, "I want more of something," they'll go, "If it's not a big book, I'm not going to build it." This committee over the last 50 years has been dominated by car interest. Mm-hmm. AAA, of which I'm a member, I have my AAA card, has two seats on this board. And they are there to ensure that it is drivers and drivers first who get heard. There is legislation before the state right now, in the state legislature, AB 345, there's a bill number, that would increase the representation on the architect, right? CTCDC, that would also provide space for walk advocates, the disabled transit advocates, groups that actually also use the road. It is extremely important that we get this bill passed, so any support that you can offer to it would also be good. The California Bicycle Coalition is the lead agency on that. If you go to their website, www.calbike.org, they have contact information for how to get this bill passed.
Who's carrying it?
Pardon?
Who's carrying it in the legislature?
It is Atkins from San Diego. Yes, very good person. So, at the local level, I think it's important that we continue to push for complete streets policies at the local level as well. One of the things we've been really pushing for, and we have to formalize this, again, where you could really be helpful, is one of the great opportunities for completing the streets is road maintenance. So there's funding from Measure A and other sources, so that when the city goes out and it resurfaces the streets, it's a great opportunity to add crosswalks, curb cuts, and ADA improvements as well. The city of Sacramento has been pretty good about doing that, but it's based on the fact they have a bike ped coordinator who just looks for that kind of work. We need to institutionalize this, to make sure that when the next person comes along, it is in the guidelines that says, when you're maintaining the road, you're out there with your jackhammers and your paint and your bucket of paint, that you also make sure that you also recompleting the streets at the same time. And we're also working to have this included with the county as well. It's a low cost way to get the work done, and it's extremely important as well. As the county continues to work on its general plan update, we need to make sure that the plans that they work with are implementing in the transportation plan also accommodate everyone as well. If you live in the county, in the unincorporated county, please contact your local supervisor and let them know that you need streets in the projects as well as the general plan itself. So that's all I have to say. I hope it was useful.
Very
and again, I thank you.
Any questions?
I'm Veronica DeMarie from Santa Rosa, Redwood Empire chapter, and there's two other members that are present with me. I just want to take a quick second to tell you the incident that is pushing me forward to where we can go with this. We had two members and one guide dog cross the street with the pedestrian light giving them the go signal, the audio giving them the go signal, and they were hit by a car. They were halfway through. And after they had the accident, one member, Eric Smiley, I think a lot of people might know Eric, was injured. As a matter of fact, that's why he's not here right now. And they were all injured slightly, but Eric was very seriously injured. So the two of them, instead of complaining and griping and everything, kind of went through what happened, what they might have been able to do or should have done as far as wearing lighter clothes or something like that. But they came up with the idea that all of the crosswalks that have the orange flashing light should be red. And as soon as he said that, it dawned on me the saying that, you know, if it's a red light, you stop and proceed with caution. The yellow light is just slow down and then, you know, move on. So when people see the amber light, it doesn't register. It's like, let's hit the gas so we can get through and, you know, beat the light, is more the mentality that goes with it. So I understand that there's a particular reason why those crosswalk lights are not yellow. I mean, the yellow ones are not red. And I would really like to know why and create a bill. I'm wondering if it's a situation that can go into the transportation bill to make that change. and not just locally in Santa Rosa, but nationally.
Well, that's actually part of what the CTCDC that I mentioned, the committee, the Kaiser committee that we're trying to get expanded, that's the kind of thing they take on. Because what goes into the, it's called the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, the big book. These are engineers. If it ain't in the book, they don't build it. Right. One of the things they do is conduct experiments. You can do something outside of the box, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, okay, in this jurisdiction, we give them permission to try to do something like change the color of the crosswalk lights. So that's something that can be done without having a bill passed. That can be done by a request to Caltrans to redesign the manual, which allows that. Mm-hmm. Our concern, again, going back to this bill, which is a big concern for us, is that you have to have people on the committee who can see this as a real need. Because what you would hear, having sat in on some of these discussions, is they'll say, a red light will confuse drivers. That's the backlash you're going to get. What you do is you say, well, let's perform an experiment somewhere in the state, and you get a jurisdiction to sponsor that, say Santa Rosa. Mm-hmm. You do it for a year. No one dies, and you say, see, it can be done. Now let's allow this elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Let me just piggyback on that. It's having dealt with the California Traffic Devices Control Committee for more than 25 years, since that is a requirement from the federal government, I know they're going to pretty much say they can't address it, that it'll have to go to the national councils, the National Traffic Control Devices Committee. And that's something maybe we'd work with ACB to take a look at that, and that would be something where Santa Rosa, if your local public works or Department of Transportation, whatever they're called, is willing to experiment and do an experiment on that so data can be gathered. So I like Terry was saying, I strongly encourage you to talk to your traffic engineers there in Santa Rosa to see if they would be willing to do this. Now that this incurs money and staffing, and with the reduction, they may not be as open as they would have been a few years ago. But this is something they would need to then see if they'd have to go to the national level, because generally California doesn't want to deviate from the manual uniform traffic control devices. Like, it's the Bible of the traffic engineers, and like the manual, it comes down to California, and then there's California amendments, but they don't go beyond or deviate from what the feds have already in their manual. So it's a lengthy process, and there's merit to what you're saying, but I would suggest starting as a group, working with your local transportation department and seeing what could be done to get in some research actually implemented there on this issue.
Well, this is Beryl from Redwood Empire. That has actually been brought up at the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Board. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, after that accident, we went back and did a walkabout at that area. And that intersection was relatively new, and they had put something new in there. Right beside the yellow flashing light, another signal with a big red hand on it. That didn't stop the driver, however.
Okay, well, that's interesting information, but I strongly encourage you to pursue it, and I know you're not going to let this drop. Mm-hmm. So any other questions?
Eugene, it's Arthur Lake with Lake Traffic Solutions.
Hi, Arthur.
Howdy. Actually, the Red Hawk, which is sort of a cross between a traffic signal and a pedestrian signal, is about to be adopted by California.
Oh.
And it allows for mid-block crosswalks, the very red signal that the lady from Santa Rosa was hoping for. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be addressed, I'm pretty sure, at the next CTCDC meeting in June.
Just the hand, or is it...
No, there's no hand about it. It's a red signal, a prescribed red signal for, 12 inches around for... traffic.
Yes, call.
I'm sorry?
How can we contact you?
A Lake, L-A-K-E.
Just a bit of a follow-up. Yeah, the next meeting has been pushed back to July.
Okay.
The good news is it means we have until the end of the month to provide comments. So perhaps you can he can help you, you know, move on drafting some comments that get posted up on the Caltrans website and that help inform the committee's this.
Let me ask, and I know what Don, but maybe Terry or Arthur, either one, has Part 4 been, the draft been issued yet for public comment? This is on accessible pedestrian signals that they want to take the federal ones in, which are excellent. They're what we've wanted for years. So I was just wondering if they, have they released that yet?
I think they have. The website has been updated. Because part of what they wanted to do, they pushed the meeting back a month in order to be able to get a bit more work done.
Okay. We'll have to check that. Okay, Don?
Don Wilcox. I run the health library with Roger Peterson at Vista for the behalf of the entire visually impaired community anywhere. And I brought CDs that we produced for all this year's information that's on the library, and also some print for people that want it, the various packs. And also I can sign you up for our research lists on the retina and on the ones on glaucoma and ones on diabetes itself. And everything's free because we're free.
Do you want to ask your question to our speaker? You had a question. You had a question for our speaker.
No, I got that with Mr. Lake. Was the last one.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Terry. It's just getting up. To be honest with you, I'm disappointed the numbers in here are very small. I know we're competing with other things there. As you've been, you heard our last two speakers say that, you know, one of the things you really need to be knowledgeable about your subject matter and be armed with information so that when you are advocating for something, that you're coming from a position of knowledge and strength. We heard about the incident in Santa Rosa, very unfortunate, and there, I believe a few years ago there was in Merced, there was a lady crossing with her guide dog, and they both were killed at the intersection. Almost similar situation, except there was no signal. There were crosswalks, but no signal. Thing is, we need to understand what drivers know or don't know. We need that information, and what is in the California Vehicle Code. And that was the idea, was to learn more what drivers are taught or informed about when getting the driver's license. And also within that, you know, there is a driver's handbook, and in there are they also provide information about what is the responsibility of a pedestrian, which that is something, unfortunately, most pedestrians don't even know that exists in the handbook. And within that area, there is a section that has to do with it's in the issues of people with visual impairments. I personally have helped get some of that in, and I know some of the rest of you in the audience have done that over the years. So we've invited our next speaker to come in from the Department of Motor Vehicles, whose office oversees the information that is disseminated. Now, before we go any further, Department of Motor Vehicles, and I could be corrected, provides this information, but keep in mind, they're not the enforcers of the California Vehicle Code. They're not the ones that go after the drivers and say, you got to comply. They just follow the vehicle code, and then they're educating and bring that into what drivers need to know when they go and get a driver's license. So there's frustration and anger, but these are not the people to go after. Nor are law enforcement people either, because they're the ones they're trying to enforce it. Got a lot of problems. As I refer to it, pedestrian rage. We hear about road rage, but there's pedestrian rage. I know when we're all cut off or have somebody parks across the crosswalk markings and pushes you out into the intersection, moving traffic just to get around, and they don't want to let you through. So our speaker is the Assistant Division Chief of the Publishing and Online Information Branch of the Department of Motor Vehicles. She's been with the department for 31 years, 21 of those years in management positions in the local offices and as well as in headquarters. She's also been very much responsible for implementing and seeing to that the efforts that the department's made in access compliance are been completed. So we have a very knowledgeable person and somebody who is very interested in access for all persons. And so I would like to then introduce, and I apologize, Letitia Finner.
Yes, correct, Finner.
Yes, Finner. Thank you. And let's give her a hand.
Thank you very much. I also brought along Kathy Kelly, who is the driver's license manager, policy manager. She's also very instrumental in helping our department to implement new laws and regulations as it relates to traffic safety, drivers and pedestrians. I'm very, very happy to be here this morning to impart what we have done as a department for all individuals. As Eugene kindly mentioned, we have taken a proactive role to try to educate the public, both driving and pedestrians, on the importance of traffic safety. We do that as time changes. For instance, we now have electric vehicles that are very difficult to hear. And we thought it was important enough to have that information and awareness in the handbook so that drivers of these hybrid vehicles are especially aware of pedestrians' inability to hear. I mean, I can't hear. I have several friends that have hybrids, and it's very difficult for me to hear whether they're on or not. So it's very, very, very difficult. So we do try to do the best we can as far as that goes. Some of the other, can you hear? You can't hear me? Okay. He's got it? Okay. So one of the other things that we do is we incorporate questions for every driver regarding pedestrians and especially the visually impaired pedestrian, so that in the 10 exams that we have 3 to 5 questions that talk about pedestrian or pedestrians that are visually impaired. So every single driver has at least 1 or 2 questions in their exam. So that's one thing that we do. We have several pages in the handbook that addresses pedestrian responsibilities and driver responsibilities and how our roadways are really shared community access roads. So we're happy to do that. The other thing that we have done is we've done an awareness campaign for our 169 field offices statewide to talk a little bit about customers that come into an office that have service animals. Every office now has a counter that is used for physically impaired or visually impaired customers. So we want you to be able to do your business when you need to do it and do it in a manner that's respectful and accommodating at the same time. The department has also gone about renovating all of the offices and providing accessibility for all customers, which is very, very, very important to all of us. The other thing that we've done is, as you know, the intranet is very big now, and we're the first state agency that complied with a federal regulation to make all content accessible. which means that we have what we're going to call metadata that describes if there's a graphic in the content. So if you have a JAWS reader or any other kind of reader, that when you come across a graphic or color or whatever, that's explained to you in the content. So we're very proactive. I think we are up to 98% accessible, and the 2% is only when we have technical difficulties that it takes us a bit longer to convert that to accessibility standards. But 98% is pretty darn good.
Great.
Yeah. So we're touching every single part of our business to accommodate all of our customers. We also have an American Sign Language exam for the handbook. We have an audio exam for the handbook, so that's another method by which you could get safety information and updated information. So anyway, I'm very, very pleased and gratified to be a part of this effort. I'm a member of the Disabled Advisory Committee for the Department of Motor Vehicles. It's one of the largest in state government and is the forerunner. Again, we have this committee that advises administrators on the needs of employees and customers and what would make it better for them. We had a comment from one of our employees that's visually impaired, and one of the things that she mentioned to us is that with the tools that the department provides for her, she's able to do her job. She just recently was promoted to a managerial position. And it's nice to hear that the tools that we're providing to our employees really help them perform at their best. So we not only take care of external customers, but we take care of internal customers as well. And our internal customers are also our employees. So I don't know what you'd like for me to talk about specifically.
Perhaps if you could, what's maybe in the handbook? So people, I am assuming, are not familiar with the handbook, but what is it the drivers know or they find there about dealing with pedestrians who are blind? You know, like some of the regulations about yielding the right of way with a red light or a green light. Those things, if some of those things, because there's a lot of assumptions, that there's a lot of regulations, a lot of things, and they wonder why these are not enforced, but in reality, they need to know what's reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's several sections in the California Driver Handbook that addressed pedestrian safety. One of the things that we have is we advise pedestrians that we also have, you know, somebody mentioned the beeping and chirping sound as verbal cues for pedestrians. And let me move this over. Okay. We also have, important messages. For instance, in one section we indicate blind pedestrians rely on the sound of your vehicle to become aware of your vehicle's presence. So it's important that you stop your vehicle within 5 feet of the crosswalk. Drivers of hybrid and electric vehicles must remain especially aware, as we talked before, because there is no engine noise. Also, we talk about... let me go to the next step here. Hopefully this is accurate. When a blind person pulls his or her cane and steps away from the intersection, this gesture usually means for you to go. And I believe that's true. Is that correct? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So those are the kinds of things that drivers need to know, because oftentimes they're not educated in the protocol and what a blind pedestrian will do. Sometimes when they hesitate too much, it becomes a little bit more dangerous. So we feel it's important that those kinds of understanding are portrayed in the handbook. Also, we talk about pedestrians who use a guide dog or a cane with or without the red tip. Of course, should always be given the right of way at all times, irregardless. It describes that the pedestrians are partially or totally blind, and that when pedestrians are in your vicinity, be especially careful when turning corners and backing up. This is especially important again, because of the location of the vehicle versus the pedestrian. It goes on to talk about what you should and should not do, and it has a long list. It has probably 7 tips in the handbook. Those of you that have internet access, I would strongly recommend that you might go through and listen to it. You could do that in audio as well. But it has a very long list of, you know, do not stop your vehicle more than 5 feet from the crosswalk unless there is an advanced stop bar. Stop at all crosswalks where pedestrians are waiting. Do not in the middle of the crosswalk, which is very important. Do not give the blind pedestrian verbal directions. Do not wait too long for blind pedestrians to cross the street. Do not turn right without looking first. Again, yes. And one of the ones says, do not honk your horn at a blind person. And do not block any sidewalks. Those are some of the tips that we have. I didn't make a note of all of them, but those are just an example of some of the things that we have in the handbook. But it's sprinkled throughout the handbook, this information, which is good.
Absolutely.
You know, what makes this handbook really, really a good tool is to get input from the public. That's what makes this, because you know best the difficulties that you encounter. We welcome every and all suggestions and recommendations. More times than not, we incorporate them into our handbook. It, after all, it is an educational tool, so the better educated a driver, the better that everyone will remain safe. So I'd be happy to add that to the next revision of the handbook. That's a great suggestion. Yes, ma'am.
Did you mean to say white tip cane? I mean red tip canes?
Yes.
Red
and white and red.
Yeah, white
both.
And red.
Right, yeah. Yes. They're both, irregardless of either. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. So.
Perhaps, you know, the one thing is, does the department do any campaigns that maybe this organization could be involved in educating the public about the impact of making right turns on green lights, and where you have a green light and you're just about to start, and somebody has, the driver decides to make the right turn in front of you, cut you off, you have to step back, and then the car passes, and you still have the signal, and you start again, and another car, thinking, well, the first one got through, I can try to get through, cut you off, and either you could end up walking in front of that second turning car, or you've totally missed the whole cycle for safety. And we're just wondering if there's a way of, if the department is doing any campaign, you know, PSAs or anything there, that this organization could be involved working with you to get that. That is one of the biggest problems, not just in California, but I'm on an advisory committee on the national level, that we're getting complaints from over the country about that.
Absolutely. We have public service ads in all of the handbooks, and although the cycle for this year has already passed, I will be more than happy to do an illustration of that dangerous maneuver and the lack of attention that the drivers have to that danger. So I'm making notes. I will put this in the handbook for the next cycle. So we'll send you an advanced copy once we get the ad completed so that you can take a look at it and see what you think before we incorporate that.
Do you also work with the school districts, the department, and with the driver's education programs to educate the upcoming drivers from high school?
And actually, that's my program. I'm not sure whether you can hear me with this. All teenagers are required to take driver education, a classroom course on the rules of the road, traffic safety, in preparation for getting a permit to operate a vehicle. So that is a key portion of the education that they receive, is the sharing the roads, the sidewalks with pedestrians and with bicyclists, so that they are aware of their responsibility as it comes to pedestrians. We also have another program for drivers that are already licensed. The negligent operator program will take people off the road if they get too many violations. One way to avoid having the consequences of a violation is to go to a traffic violator school program, which allows you to keep the conviction off your record. That traffic violator school program, again, has a substantial amount of information about pedestrian safety and how to react to different situations with pedestrians. But you ask if there was some way that this group could get involved. One of the other things that the department has done is they're very heavily involved in the completion of the state's strategic highway safety plan. I always stumble over that. A number of years ago, that effort was started in the state. DMV is involved in it, so is Caltrans, so are numerous other agencies. And their first step was to look at major issues on traffic safety, not just for vehicles, but across the board. So there is a group, and they've decided that it's an action area or a challenge area, the challenges that we face. There is one specifically for pedestrians. There's also one for bicyclists. So that would be a group that you might want to be involved in. I have right now for this year the items that they are going forward with, and the first one sounds like something that you would be very much interested in, and that is pedestrian safety and media. And they're looking at doing media messages locally and statewide and establishing a technical advisory committee to work to that end.
What is this committee?
This is a pedestrian safety and media committee. It's part of challenge area that is part of the state highway safety plan.
This is something definitely would be of interest to the California Council of Blind, because this would have to be a state-level effort,
right,
or organization rather than local. But this is something we definitely would like to follow up with you on. It.
And they're also working on, you know, defining suitable speed. And we heard part of the prior speaker, but they are looking at a statewide level and with federal input on how to determine what is a suitable and safe speed given the type of roadway. So they are very interested in doing that as well. They're doing an analysis of that, and they want to develop a plan to try to get it implemented, whatever they come up with, implement it statewide. They're also in the process of putting together a group to do a crosswalk inventory and pavement marking. And we all know how important the compliance with ADA is, and the cutouts and the extra paint and the lines and the signals. All of that's important. But it's really hard to go forward in an organized fashion when you don't know what's out there. You don't know where the areas are that have the most need. So that is one of their plans, is to go forward and sort of analyze what's out there, where the hot spots are, where the important places are that have the most pedestrian traffic, the most need for these additional signals and crosswalks. So they are in the midst of that. And they're doing the same thing on a complete streets inventory of looking at the types of streets. Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got the mic.
So I wanted to ask you about the issue of eye contact. We hear from traffic engineers all the time, and when they talk about traffic circles and shared spaces and so forth, they're always talking about eye contact, about pedestrians and drivers making eye contact. And, of course, most blind people, I think it's safe to say, cannot make eye contact with drivers. And I wonder if that's something, I've even told people that what my white cane means is that I can't make eye contact with you. And I wonder if that's something that might be discussed in educational materials.
I think that's a really good suggestion. You know, that is important. You know, as a driver, I mean, I do look for pedestrians to make eye contact to make sure I know what they're trying to do so that I can react properly. But it isn't just eye contact. It's also, you know, someone who's blind may not try to meet my eyes, but at least they're sort of turning in the direction. They're listening. You can see a reaction. So that's equally important. But I think the driving public needs to know that eye contact is not possible in a lot of cases.
The gestures might not be appropriate.
Well, that's true. That's true. Again, you know, waving somebody to go ahead across the street is not going to get it if the person that's waiting across the street can't see the hand. So that's not going to help. The other thing that we're working on in the department is on the commercial driver's license side, we have specific handbooks for commercial drivers, and they are sort of specified at the federal level, but we add some of our own things in. And one of our serious concerns is the relationship between a commercial vehicle and someone who has any kind of handicap, any kind of limitation of sight or movement or whatever, because it is a two-way street when we talk about commercial vehicles. There is a much higher degree of requiring the pedestrian to take some responsibility, because the truth of the matter is, in a very large commercial vehicle, if it has a large diesel engine, they're not going to hear a pedestrian, and if you get too close to the vehicle, they're not going to see a pedestrian. And there was, I think about a year ago, there was an incident of a man in a wheelchair who went in front of a truck that was waiting to make a turn out onto the street. He was not seen, and the truck picked him up. His wheelchair got hooked on the front grill of the truck, and they drove almost 10 miles with the poor man attached to the front of the vehicle. He was unharmed, but if they'd gotten on the freeway, well, and the joke to the story and the reason it made nationwide news is he had come out of a 7-Eleven with an oversized Slurpee, and he more than likely thought the driver had seen him on the side, pulled in front, and the driver's looking the other way. Now the driver didn't have a chance. So the driver doesn't hear him over the sound of the engine and probably a radio and everything else. But other vehicles, you know, people in other vehicles saw him and reported it, and the police stopped him just as he was about to go on the freeway.
Oh, my God.
And the ending joke was the man never spilled his Slurpee.
We had a question over here in the corner.
Yes, Penny. I think she's talking about you.
My question was, I know he said eye contact, but some of us do make eye contact, and when they've waved at us, they think we see it, but we're not really making eye contact. We're looking at them. And we don't really see those hand signals. So it's because we're partial, and we've seen before. So they think we see them, but we really don't.
Right.
We partials are more problems than anything, I think.
Well, I think it's important to make it clear about the different types of signals or cues that a driver needs to look for, not just eye contact or hand signals. So it's a valid point, and we certainly will incorporate that.
You talked about all teenagers have to do driver training. Is that correct?
Yes. We actually refer to it as driver education, but because it's a classroom knowledge-based course.
So it is not an option.
Until age 18. If someone does not become licensed until age 18, then there is no requirement for the training. But for a 16, 17-year-old, yes, they cannot get a license without the training.
Okay. Is it stressed during that training that the rules that they learn about driving on the road also apply when they're on a bicycle?
Yes. We do have a bicycle section in all of our various training courses.
Because that's been something that we see so many bicyclists that sort of do their own thing.
Yes, I have one at work that I've almost hit him twice now because he rides on the sidewalk where there are high bushes, And, you know, I check and make sure there's no pedestrian coming that way. And by the time I have checked the other way and start out, he's right in front of me because he's doing 25, 30 miles an hour on the sidewalk, which is dangerous for the vehicles, for other pedestrians.
Was there ever a time, somebody told me at once that there was a time when they licensed bicycles here. Is that true?
They used to have a registry of bicycles, but they didn't require anything license. For the operator or the driver of the bicycle, the rider.
They hung them under the back of the
There's
seat.
Been legislation proposed occasionally over the years to require some kind of training course, but it just really never goes very far.
No, I've brought that up with the bicycle thing, and they're not really too thrilled about it. What's the contact information for that safety thing you were talking about?
You know, I'm no longer directly involved in it, but I can certainly provide it back to the committee. Or I can give you my email address.
Okay.
If you email me, I'll provide you the right contact for the pedestrian group, because that was not my group. But actually, we can just give you a card here, and then you've got all my information.
Any flyers?
Handouts or flyers.
I brought some. I only brought one copy of the one that I thought would be appropriate, but I'd be happy to get you however many you need. I'll mail them if I can come over and get your contact information, and I will be happy to provide you with some of the literature that we have.
Any other questions?
Oh, I was just saying that I had a few questions about, you were talking about accessibility and things within the DMV office, that you were part of the disabled, and I was going to ask you, and I said, if it's not appropriate now because we're talking about pedestrian, if I can ask you afterwards if we don't want to do it in the whole group session right now.
It's perfectly fine if you'd like. If we have time, I would be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Gene, is that okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I just had a question on, you were talking about, you were educating your staff and everything about service animals.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a new sort of definition of service animal, wondering if you guys got, you know, that sort of update. And I heard that there's now new kiosks at DMV that you can, you know, get information instead of waiting in a long line, and or at least down in the LA area. I heard there's sort of a quote-unquote sort of vending machine looking thing. And, you know, obviously I don't think, you know, I'm blind, I'll be able to use that, but it's supposed to be to get through the DMV process easier, and how, you know, we would be able to access any of that or not, or how do we get through the line faster as everyone else is getting through?
Yeah, absolutely. We have what they call self-service terminals that allow you to renew your registration by going to this kiosk. So that's certainly an option for you to go through to that. And if you need assistance, we do have an employee that's assigned to the station to help you if you need help. So absolutely, that is available. All of the terminals, I think there's 25 in Southern California at this point. There's a few here in Sacramento. There's a few in Sacramento. So we do have that. And then to address the accessibility information, we have we also have a brochure that's entitled Accessibility, Internet and Intranet Information. This is given to every employee and provided with some sensitivity about you know, the needs of to make everything accessible to our clients. So we do put forth a lot of time and effort to ensure that our employees are educated on the needs of our customers, all customers, irregardless. So, yes, we do that, promote
and
that.
In response to trying to get through the lines quicker, most transactions that people go into our field office for, most of the things they do are fairly routine, and they have standard requirements, all of which are available on our website. So it's very helpful to get through more quickly if you have the ability to go in and look at that and see exactly what you need. You can also schedule an appointment, and that gets you through the line much faster because you are given an appointment time, and unless something really, really goes wrong somewhere, you're going to be waited on within 10 to 15 minutes of your appointment time. now. You know, we're like everybody else. If our computers go down or, you know, there are unforeseen things, it can take longer. But it is certainly much, much quicker with an appointment than standing in a line with everybody else who didn't make appointments.
And just to kind of dovetail on what Kathy's indicating, we're adding more and more transactions to our online services. So you can now renew your registration online, you renew your driver's license online, you can change your address online, turn in a release of liability. There's many, many, many services that are available online, so you don't even have to go into a DMV office.
Non-driver ID.
Non-driver ID is wherever
renewal,
right?
Actually, we are just going, I think, into production either now or very shortly within the month with being able to renew your ID card online.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a new service.
That's
and I'm not service. Sure, that's not my particular area. I'm not sure if it's in effect now, but I know it's ready to go within just a very short period of time.
Well, I could read the expiration date on the card.
we'll tell them the next time they decide the card that we need raised letters for the expiration date.
Yeah. I know that our people from Government Affairs, our committee, has been looking into the thing about getting, like, drivers get notifications saying your license is about to expire and that you need to renew. For the non-drivers or the ID cards that many of us have, we've heard mixed things about DMV, whether they would be open to sending us a notification on that.
Yes, we are. Yes. We're going forward to do that.
Yeah, that's already in the works.
Yeah, that's connected with the online renewal because, as you say, if you don't know, you're not going to know to go online. And you also, I think we're still using a PIN on the DL side. Or you can go and create a record for yourself with DMV and have information there so you can go in and do all of these transactions more quickly so that we have your identity and it's secure.
So we do that, and then when it's time to renew afterwards, it automatically will get a notification.
You will get a renewal, yes. Renewal.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Any last questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you very much. We're available. Eugene has my contact information if you come
or
up
go ahead and give
later.
It if you don't mind. If
sure.
You're okay. Right now, go ahead.
Okay, so my contact information is L like in Lincoln, F like in Frank, E like in Edward, N like in Nancy, N like in Nancy, E like in Edward, R like in Robert, at D like in David, M like in Mary, V like in Victor, dot, C like in Charlie, A like in Adam, dot, G like in George, O like in Ocean, V like in Victor. So it's L Finner at California DMV dot.
No, dmv.ca.gov.
Did I got it? I got it wrong. I tried to go so slow, and in the process, I messed it up for you. But Gene also has my contact information, so please feel free to contact me. I'm here to serve you guys, as I do every citizen of California, as it relates to driver motor vehicle information. So I'd welcome any suggestions, any comments, any questions.
Okay.
Thank you again very much. Thank you very much. Yes, we do.
Again, thank you very much for giving your time.
Well. Thank you.
Very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everyone coming today. I hope that this was an informative morning. Yeah. And Bernice and I will be very interested in getting any feedback as to things you would like to see from this, and also for preparation for our fall convention, which would be at the LA Crown Plaza in Los Angeles. Same time, if there's subjects you would like us to cover, please let Bernice and I know. And therefore, we're finished for the morning. Thank you.